I'm your host, Matt Bergman, and welcome to From the Hawk's Nest. Today, my guest is Robert Major. He is the Distinguished Professor of Art and the Gray Gallery Curator here at Quincy University in a role he's been doing for many, many years. Bob, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Let's start with your role and talk about the art professorship, your role as the Distinguished Professor of Art, and talk about your approach to your job and the accolades for your work are many. I mean, I know that's a loaded question. Let's maybe start at the beginning and where you got your degrees and how you came to QU.
My undergraduate work was done at Ball State University, and two famous people graduated around the time I did. I'm not as famous as they are. One guy that was behind me 4 years is a guy named David Letterman. And a guy that was behind me 1 year is a guy named Garfield the Cat by Jim Davis. So I had good company there, unbeknownst to them, knowing them there. And then the graduate work was at Miami of Ohio, in Oxford, Ohio. And then finding this place was, I think, the guy upstairs said I had to come here. And it was by, I went to the library and looked through some catalogs and said, where do I want to apply? And I applied to Kendo School of Art and Design and Western Michigan University. And then I picked this unknown place called Quincy College at the time.
Mm-hmm. And what year was that?
When I picked it or when I came?
When you came.
1968.
Wow.
Kind of an interesting experience. But along the way, I have to say that I've had a lot of good people watch out for me, because when I was in high school, I wanted to take art. And I was a freshman, and I was told I couldn't take it because they didn't start until sophomore year. And I told them I was paying for my education, and I wanted art. And they said, okay, you could take it as long as you can keep the percentage. I said, well, I don't have to worry about that. Then the next year, I was looking forward to it, and then I was informed for the first time that art was for girls and not for boys. So they didn't have art for boys anymore at this Catholic high school. But there was a secretary in the office who said she's taking a watercolor class at the local South Bend Art Center. Would I like to join her? So I went in the evening with her, and that teacher didn't want me to sit there and watch. He wanted me to participate with all these adult ladies. And so I did, and then we had our critique, and I was a little embarrassed because it's going to have a critique, you know. But they stroked my back and encouraged me, and then he took an interest in me and ended up getting a scholarship at the Art Center and studying with him and being his teaching assistant. And then later on in the high school year, the principal said, well, there's a high school art workshop at Ball State University. It's too late to apply for a scholarship, but you could send in a portfolio and see if you can get in. So that's what I did, and I got in. And, of course, my teacher said, when you go there, make sure that you work real hard, because some of them will think it's just a vacation. And when you get a critique, just turn the other cheek. And so at the end of the workshop, we spread our artwork all the way out. I think I had maybe 50 pieces, and other people had 7 or 8 pieces. And this little short lady with a crew-cut haircut and 2 French poodles and smoked a corncob pipe came by and said, who did this work? And I said, I did. It turned out she was chairman of the art department, and the next week she sent me a letter and a scholarship and said, come and get a degree if you want. And I wasn't planning on going to college, but that's how I got to college, is because of that. I think that was an interesting story.
It is. You know? Very interesting.
So, you know, I owe a lot to different people who took an interest in me, but I also worked hard. I had a good work ethic, so, you know, they got rewarded that way.
Yeah. Well, you've been at QU for over 50 years.
Yeah, 56.
56 years, and you've taught many, many courses during that time.
Almost all of them.
What are some of your favorite courses to teach?
Well, watercolor is one of them. I'm a practicing watercolorist. I'm teaching 2D design and finding the introduction to computer graphics, you know. because I enjoyed that. And anytime I felt there was a need in the program, I tried to initiate it. Like we had a business and art degree, and I supervised student teachers and organized that a little better. And we had a studio degree.
Well, you know, speaking of graphic design, you basically developed our graphic design program here. And it kind of all started back in the early 70s.
Yeah. What we used to do is we used to call it commercial art, and it was all hands-on, doing layout and paste-ups. And eventually it evolved into computers. And I was trying to get Macs for us, but when I applied for the grant, I didn't know that the business department was thrown in with us, so they ended up getting the computers. And by then, Father Tom, having seen an elementary school where they used, I forgot the name of the program now. Anyway, he was impressed, so he initiated a computer. And then when he passed away, I inherited it. I had no plans to be involved with computers, but I ended up being involved with computers. So I took over his classes and developed it into Windows PCs.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hired a full-time graphic designer, and he went Mac. And so now I'm teaching Mac. So I went through the whole framework.
Comes full circle.
Yeah.
Tell us about the growth in the program over the past decades.
I'm not sure how you could explain the growth. It's just we tried to gear the student to their interests. So some want to go into the commercial field, so that's why we have initiated the graphic design program. And the ones in studio who like to create art for themselves and not to market it in terms of the commercial reasons, we had the studio degree. And then they went on to graduate school. And like one of them, we have a graduate, Steve Luking, who ended up teaching at DePaul University. And then another one set up his own art school in Chicago. And another one who's a big donor here, she teaches up in the Chicago Art Center up there. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's good to see, once they get the degree, that they continue in their field. And of course, I set up in the Gray Gallery, hopefully a yearly exhibit that honors graduates who are still active in the area. So we have an alumni show in most cases. Try to recognize that they're still producing and they're still involved in the work. Except, unfortunately, a lot of the student teachers I had who ended up having teaching jobs here in Quincy. Dave Brown at the high school and Dave Moss out of Payson and Amath at the junior high. Rose Camastro Pritchett, they were all teachers, and most of them are retired now.
So. Wait, that's not right.
but the beauty of having a teacher ed program, I learned, was they not only taught art in their school, but they encouraged them to attend QU. So the growth was phenomenal in our program because of them.
Yeah. You know. What do you find most rewarding as an art professor?
Working with students, having guiding them along the way, how to think creatively, how to solve problems, how to find their voice, and hopefully encourage them to develop a sense of passion.
You've mentioned a few successful alums here in the past few minutes. Do you have a real success story, maybe your favorite success story of an alum that graduated from the art program?
Got a lot of many of them. I mean, there's one that's works at the Cleveland Museum of Art as a curator. And Steve, I mentioned, one of the things I liked about Steve, they had a statewide competition for an environmental sculpture piece at the University of Illinois, and he won that competition. And so if you go on their campus in the quad area, there's this piece.
Nice.
So that's kind of neat to see. There's a young lady from South Korea I had. She is a full-time painter, and she sells her paintings around $5,000 a piece, and she's still producing. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, let's take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more with Bob about how his artwork and his awards and recognitions are known all around the world. Stay with us. You're listening to From the Hawk's Nest.
Hey, QU alum. We want to stay connected with you. Tell us what's happening in your life and your career. Let us know when you move and update your email address. Share when you change jobs, receive a promotion, or have other accomplishments and recognitions. And yes, we want to know when you get married and when you have a baby and make additions to your family. Hey, and you can always contact us just to say hello. Feel free to send pictures of yourself or others which may be of interest to the Quincy University community. Stay connected with us through various social media like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn.
And welcome back to From the Hawk's Nest. I'm your host, Matt Bergman, and today we're talking with Robert Major, Distinguished Professor of Art and Gray Gallery Curator. And Bob, your list of artwork, awards, and acknowledgments is extensive. What are some of the most rewarding and most enjoyable exhibitions to be a part of?
All of them.
No, there's so many.
I actually, most people teach what they know, and I practice what I teach and try to set an example for my students. And then, even though I have colleagues, other professional artists now said, Bob, you got to retire because just think, you could be in the studio all day and you could be making these things. And I, you know, it's kind of hard because if you like teaching, it's hard mm-hmm. to break away from that. But and a lot of my colleagues who said that do workshops around the United States, and now they're slowly slowing down because they're getting older and not teaching anymore except in their areas. But getting into an international show, just like recently at the Missouri International Watercolor Juried Show at the Saks Fifth Avenue Gallery in St. Louis, and taking third place made me feel real good.
Yeah.
And these
numbers, I just want to, you know, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but you've presented over 65 one-man exhibitions, and your works have been selected in exhibitions for over 500 juried competitions.
Yeah, maybe higher, but that's right. And it doesn't cover all the invitational shows I'm involved with. Like I showed in Fabriano, Italy, I was invited four times to represent the United States of America with my work. And then I had the one thing I was really proud of is my son and I were the only father-son juried into this international show in China, a watercolor show, and we both got in. And only father-son. So that meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
And a lot of these shows are kind enough to publish a big book or catalog documenting the shows, and so I have those in my files, and I use those to share with my students, like, look what's here being done all over the world by these artists, mm-hmm. different countries, you know, like Fabriano had like 80 countries represented. So that's always the fun part.
Yeah. Who are some of the artists that you admire and whose work you follow?
Well, I like anybody that's in the 19th or 20th century I admire. Probably the oldest one I admire is Vermeer because of his intimacy with the images, you know. But Hans Hoffman, I teach push and pull of color. The Abstract Expressionist had a strong influence on me. Seurat, I admire because of his unique technique that he developed. But I like them all. You know, I'm not heavy on one. I know mm-hmm. Father Tom Brown, his favorite artist that he always mentioned to me was Michelangelo. Mm. He just loved him. And I didn't know. I liked Michelangelo, but I had no idea what it was like until I had the opportunity to go to Italy with the Assisi program that we sponsored here. Yeah. And I went 2 years, and I wouldn't go, I told him, unless we had Florence on the agenda. And when I went, I finally got to see David in person. You know, wow. I go, wow. And then the Pietà in St. Peter's, that was, you know, he was such a young person. It's the only piece he signed because people thought it was an older artist that did it, and Michelangelo wanted them to know it was him.
Yeah. So, how would you explain what kind of artist you are and how you approach artwork?
I think all art is involved with aspects of composition and aspects of color. Color is very strong for me. I intuit it. I don't rely on a system, even though you can, like with my students in computer graphics. I tell them, what is analogous color? How do you use that in this image? And trying to get them to understand that that gives you more unity and relatedness when it's analogous. Complementary for excitement. But color is very important, and composition is very important. The idea and the content is very important. Having something to say, and mostly what I also said, not only something to say, but reflects your own personality. You know.
What pieces are you currently working on?
I have several. Actually, to tell you the truth, the problem about getting older is you look back at some of your older pieces and you go, that needs to be changed. That needs to be changed. And you go, excuse me, oh, crap. I got to take it out of the frame, and I got to mount it, and I got to paint it. Even though it's been in shows before,
yeah,
I'm just not easy with it. So that's what I've been doing in the last three or four paintings. But I'll sit down, and what I do is, and I just finished an article, I'm going to try to get it published, how do you approach to get ideas? And that's where I'm at now, to go back to making 4x6 paper collages to create ideas for the paintings I can blow up into watercolors.
Yeah. So, well, you've mentioned this a couple of times during this conversation, but you know, I know that you've maintained contact with art alumni from QU all over the world throughout many, many years. You know, what are some of, you know, what is rewarding to you about those connections that you've made?
Being alive. This long, you know, I'm just glad I can stay in touch with them. And there's some I wish would stay in touch with me, but I haven't heard from. And unfortunately, also, the problem about living longer is I've had some students pass away, which I really miss. And I can't believe they're gone, you know.
Absolutely. The Gray Gallery is, you know, a pride point for you, I know. Mm-hmm. And we just did some work in there a couple of years ago to kind of freshen it up and liven it up. But how do you go about picking your season and your shows and looking at what you're going to bring in?
My main priority is to find out what courses are we teaching and who can I find or what shows can I find that will add to the dimension of the courses that we offered. Like Carl would bring in his class to see a certain drawing show I might have up there. Or I'd bring, well, actually yesterday I brought a student in to see the watercolor show that we had, which is a regional group called the Great River Watercolor Society, which I founded some years ago. And it's a tri-state area that we encourage amateurs, professionals to join, and we try to bring in visiting artists. So that's how I select them, is in terms of that. Interesting enough, when I founded the gallery, shows were free, and all you had to do was pay for shipping. And so I used some of the ceramic shipping budget to pay for that. But eventually shows got very expensive, and shipping got very costly. And I happened to be on the Student Activity Center committee, and I talked them into supporting the gallery program. So I got some money from them for years. They supported it, and finally, I think Barb Schleppenbach, when she was dean, put it in the budget as an item to support the gallery. But things got expensive, so then I decided, well, we got a local art center who brings in group shows. So my focus was on trying to bring in one-person shows and focus on that individual. And most people don't realize how involved framing the work is, how costly framing the work is.
And, sure.
So I try to make sure I have some kind of honorarium for him for doing it.
Yeah. So. I think I last did watercolors in fourth grade. Would I qualify? is that amateur?
Oh, well, if I have an amateur show, yes.
Okay. Well, I meant for just the society. Just I don't want a show.
Okay. And we do have, every year, we do have a fall faculty show, so new students could see what their teachers are doing, and it forces the teachers to try to create something new.
Yep.
And then in the spring, we have the student show. I asked my colleagues to pick best works from their courses so we could show the university the breadth of what we offer. And then we have a baccalaureate show and celebrate the graduates. And this is part of their assessment program where they have to put together a show, they have to put together a catalog, and they have to have an exit interview with us. And I think last year I was able to get one of them involved in the academic symposium, and so he Great. Got to give a gallery talk.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, you've been at this a long time. What advice in your years of experience do you have for alumni or maybe current students?
Have a good work ethic. Find yourself. Find your voice. And share it, and be productive.
Very, very good. I would agree with all of those statements, so thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
And thank you for being our guest today on the show. And
thanks for the invite.
And be sure to tune in next time for another episode of From the Hawk's Nest, where we talk to QU faculty, staff, students, Franciscan friars, and QU alums to hear about their journey at Quincy University. I'm Matt Bergman, and remember, it's always a great day to be a Hawk.